displays.
Session on human rights violations on the U.S.-Mexico border. Of course, this session is directly related to the theme of this year's annual meeting of migration and health, and this session is the last session being offered by the International Human Rights Committee. So I thank you for joining us this afternoon. Before we get started with our panel, we actually have a very practical application of something we can do. I know a lot of us have been sitting in meetings all day, every day. But there is a rally that's going to be taking place just following this session, so I want to allow Felipe the opportunity to talk about the purpose of that rally and invite you all to join it. Marching down the streets in Philadelphia next year, right? We'll do that too. But 70-degree protesting is a lot easier to advocate for, right? Well, thank you very much to Felipe, and I hope that people will join in the rally this afternoon immediately following this session. We have two panelists with us here today to talk about human rights violations on the U.S.-Mexico border. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time stealing their thunder, so I'll just give some very brief introductions. Our first speaker today is Benjamin Prado. He is a program coordinator at the American Friends Service Committee based here in San Diego, and he's going to talk directly about the subject of human rights violations on the border.
Thank you very much, and I want to thank each and every one of you for attending this workshop. It's important to us as the American Friends Service Committee to see the issue of human rights being discussed at a health convention. The American Friends Service Committee, just really quick, is a Quaker organization from the Religious Society of Friends. It was founded in 1917 as an alternative for many people who had been recruited to serve in World War I or drafted into World War I. They believe that there needed to be an alternative to that, and instead went into the service side of serving in the war or in the conflict, and instead of going and fighting, they developed these humanitarian brigades that did mainly healthcare work. And so the history of the AFSC is a peace organization. It's known throughout the world as a peace organization. It's one of the central organizations that opposes war and conflict, the war in Iraq, for example, and the Vietnam War. And the alternatives is educating people about this concept of human rights and peaceful resolutions to conflicts not only here but throughout the world. The San Diego office of the American Friends Service Committee has since 1970 been focusing primarily on the issue of the border as a conflict area. And we've seen many violations of human rights as a consequence of increased border enforcement, increased border patrol, increased the enforcement of immigration laws in general. And so this presentation, as outlined in the description, will show and provide examples on the different violations of human rights that we're witnessing, strategies and tactics that are utilized by the by immigration agencies, as was mentioned, one of them being immigration raids. But in general, we'll provide a outlook on what the border landscape has looked like in the past 20 or so years, and how this has repercussions not only in migrant communities, but in society in general. And we'll touch upon the healthcare aspects or the effects of immigration enforcement on border communities. So with that, being that it's a human rights workshop, I want to see how many of you have actually heard of this concept called human rights. Okay, good. I see a lot of hands up. So what would you say, in your opinion, is human rights to you? Just a couple. You can just throw it out there. What, or better yet, a better question, what do you need to live a dignified life as a human being? What are your needs as a human being to live a very dignified life?
Clean food and water.
Housing.
Security.
I'm sorry?
Security.
Security? Okay. Security of person? Not be beaten or... Okay.
Equality.
Equality. Okay. Recognition of your person. Okay. Healthcare.
Right to work. Make a living.
To make a living. Okay. Right to work.
Respect.
Anything else?
Freedom of movement.
Freedom of movement. Great. All of these things that you mentioned are established within the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And these are the main basic tenets, the main basic elements to live a dignified life. Need housing, need to work, historically human condition to for survival is work, right? Food and nutrition, healthcare and education. These are the main themes that come out when you talk about dignity, human dignity. And so when we talk about human dignity, we have to see those elements within our society that in many instances violate those the ability for a person to achieve and access those needs, because they're not just rights, they're not just rights in some kind of ambiguous form, but they're physical, natural needs that a person needs in order to survive. And so when we talk about the border and human rights, as an organization, we feel it's important to contextualize the issue of the border, historically speaking. And so when we talk about the historical context of this thing called the U.S. border, the U.S.-Mexico border, we have to talk about it within the context of how the United States became, first of all, a nation state, and what were the ideological underpinnings and thrusts that moved the United States to expand. And so the issue here is that the border itself is a manifestation of a conflict. There is this conflict that happened between the United States and Mexico in particular. It happened in during a period of time when there was a struggle between free states and slave states. Mexico had just come out of an independence movement to abolish slavery under colonial rule, under Spanish colonial rule. And it came also as a consequence of this concept called manifest destiny. How many of you have heard of Manifest Destiny before? Good. It's a brief lesson in American history, right? And the very foundation and concept of the underpinning of concept of Manifest Destiny was what? Who can? I'm sorry? To reach the specific, the Pacific, okay? This right to expand from sea to shining sea, right? And it was a destiny ordained by who? By God, right? That white people in particular had the right to expand from sea to shining sea, and that it was ordained by God. And so the very concept of Manifest Destiny was a push for expansion. In fact, just 4 years ago, in December, Bush referenced this, right? To go and expand into Iraq, to bring democracy to Iraq. And so this is a very real and very live concept today in our real world. So there was a war, a conflict, the invasion of Mexico. In fact, the Marines have a hymn. I'm not sure you have heard it. It says, from the halls of Moctezuma, right, to the shores of Tripoli. And what they're referring to is Mexico City when they invaded Mexico, surrounded the Zócalo, and with a gun pretty much in the face of legislators said, sign the treaty to end the war or we will kill you. And so you see that this conflict ended up with this Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, a treaty that said there will be open borders, that people will be free to move, that there would be respect for culture and language, meaning that Spanish and other indigenous languages will be respected and taught, and that there would be water and land rights for those Mexicans that found themselves now foreigners, in essence, on their own land. So it defined the boundary between Mexico and the United States. Mexico lost 55% for national territory. There was the Gadsden Purchase to facilitate trade. And in essence, there was a political boundary that was drawn on the land. And so that's the historical context. And you don't have to agree with me. We'll have time for questions and answers at the end. But this is a historical reality that is taught in our textbooks, right? Maybe not presented in this way, but it is taught. You can find this in any historical text used in public education. So, moving back now to fast-forwarding from that historical context to the 1994, migration patterns have historically been circular, meaning that people would come, work for a while, whether it be in the field, service sector, in a wide array of industries, and then in agriculture in particular, follow the crops, and then go back home to their families. Mainly it was the male who migrated, came up north, worked for a couple months, sent money home, and then rejoined their family during the off-seasons. This was a pre-1994 kind of circular migration. And before 1994, there was an estimated 3.4 million undocumented persons within the political borders of the United States. Today, how many do they say that there is? Anybody? Anything from 12 to 20, right? The numbers range. What are the causes of migration today, post-1994? And I'm going to be really brief on this because I want to really show and demonstrate the other aspects, is that before, post-1994, as a consequence of Operation, North American Free Trade Agreement, which is an economic treaty between Mexico, the United States, and Canada, that was argued that would open up borders, and it did for merchandise and capital, but at the same time that 1994, when they implemented NAFTA, they also implemented a military strategy to seal off the borders to human beings. So merchandise and capital can cross freely. You can go down here to Tijuana, get duty free, and go across the border, same thing on the other side, buy merchandise and bring it over without any type of tax, and money and capital can cross freely, right? So you can go to any Western Union, put some money in, send money down to Mexico or any corner of the world, really, in a matter of seconds. But the very, in order to enter into this economic agreement, the United States told Mexico that they had to reform their constitution, specifically Article 27 of the Mexican Constitution. How many of you have heard of the Article 27 of the Mexican Constitution? And can anybody tell us what it is? It's communal land holdings. And specifically it was indigenous who, the indigenous community, the Ejidos, that had communal land holdings. And in order for the United States to enter into this economic agreement, or Mexico to become part of this Northern Economic Alliance, that they had to sign away this Article 27, meaning that the indigenous peasant can now sell their piece of land. Before, the indigenous peasant would have to give that piece of land back to the community so that somebody else can work it and can produce. This was the major victory of the Mexican Revolution. Emiliano Zapata, who had this slogan of land and freedom, right? Meaning tierra y libertad. It was an agricultural reform that allowed communal land holdings, whereas before it was all what I call the hacienda system, where there was one owner of the land and people worked the land but never benefited. It was feudalism in essence. So as a consequence of this, opening up the floodgates for U.S. corn to flood Mexico, the Mexican farmer could no longer compete with U.S. grown corn. Corn, just the very essence of the product, is a product that Mexico introduced to the world. It introduced this corn and multiple other grains of corn to the world, and now Mexico today imports the majority of its corn from the U.S. And so the Mexican agriculture was wiped out. What happened? And there's several statistics there. People could no longer compete. They sold their piece of land and they had to migrate. And so that's why they came north. Today there's another important article that is being debated as we speak in Mexico having to do with oil. There's Pemex, which is the national oil, it's a nationalized oil industry, now is being auctioned off to the highest bidder, or is being debated so that it can be auctioned off to the highest bidder in the open market, meaning that very soon Shell, Chevron, and Texaco, and any other of the multinational oil companies can go in there and extract what was Mexican national wealth. What is the concept behind the militarization of the border? In essence, it is to seal off the urban areas and push migration out into the mountains and deserts. This is a strategy where now more than 5,000 people have died. There are more than 13 million people that are within the political borders of the U.S., and we see a rise in vigilante violence, people carrying out the law, taking the law into their own hands, going out there, and in essence, in many instances, carrying guns in order to enforce immigration laws, right? We've heard of many of these vigilante groups before. There's a surge in human trafficking. Human trafficking before was not an issue. Today, now it's a multi-billion dollar black market industry. And so we have not only deaths, not only violence, and it didn't stop flows of migration, and it didn't bring order or control to the borders. So what is the whole premise of this issue of enforcing immigration laws? Today, the main argument to seal off the borders is this concept of national security. And it came more as a result of the attacks on 9/11, right? We heard of national security now being the main buzzword thrown out there. And so we have billions of dollars being spent not only in the creation of the Department of Homeland Security with three very specific agencies. You have Customs and Border Protection, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and Immigration and Citizenship and Immigration Services, all with three different functions. The one that I want to specifically focus on is border customs and border protection and ICE. The impact of the border, the situation on the border. And real quick, how much time do I have? I have about maybe 5 minutes?
Yeah, 5 minutes.
So the port of entry. This is the physical barrier. This is Customs and Border Protection, or CBP, area. This is where customs, whenever you pass through the port of entry, they ask you, you know, what your citizenship is. Well, what we have there is really is a growing crisis in terms of pollution and long waits. People have been diagnosed with disorders, anxiety because of the long waits. Many of the people that live in Tijuana work in the United States, so they have to endure these long lines. We have even ADA. What we're seeing are ADA requirements, right? The American Disabilities Act, where they don't, we're no longer at the ports of entry are not open for elderly and the disabled. We also have at the border, not at the port of entry per se, but along the border, we have Border Patrol patrolling the area with 9mm hollow tip bullets, and this is an ammunition that is banned by the Geneva Convention in conventional warfare, but yet it's used right here along the border. There have been instances where Border Patrol have shot, and it has been verified, have shot people through the back, in the back. There are multiple cases. The case of Guillermo Martinez Rodriguez is a specific example. We see now an increase of tension along the border where Border Patrol is throwing gas canisters into Tijuana, where they're actually throwing rubber bullets and these sounding grenades, much of what is used even in other places, the Middle East in particular, in Israel and Palestine, in that wall. And we have within our border communities this rising an increase of border. Can't really tell that. You can't really see that, huh? Of Border Patrol activity. You can't really tell right there, but I'm not sure why. And where it is, it's the Border Patrol on boarding the public transportation, wow, asking people for documents. Let me see if I can get a better picture of that. Because this goes to the heart and core of the violations of human rights that we're seeing. You know, when we're talking about arbitrary detentions, this is a plus constitutionally being detained, the entire bus and everybody in it being detained. So this is an arbitrary detention. There is legal issues that we believe are being violated here that go against the Constitution.
Where did you copy?
In this instance, it was in one of the communities of Barrio Logan, just a couple blocks from here. In fact, you go over the bridge by Chicano Park, and this is a largely migrant community, and so we see arbitrary detentions happening within the communities, people being hauled out, people who went to work in the morning, didn't show up in the evening to pick their kids up from school. And I could go on, but I know I'm limited in time, so I'm gonna just move on. And so what we see now with the evolution, if you will, of immigration enforcement, we have now Immigration and Customs Enforcement, a new agency that came as a result of the restructuring of immigration, of the immigration law enforcement agencies. So this INS, if you remember the INS, that no longer exists. That agency no longer exists. It's been replaced by Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Customs and Border Protection. This agency has a strategic plan. It's called Operation Endgame. It's a strategy to remove or Let me correct that. It's to create the infrastructure to remove the 12 million undocumented people that are currently within the political borders of the U.S. This is a tactic. They use various tactics, home raids, worksite raids. Many of you have heard of Pottsville, Mississippi. Many of you may have seen it on TV. I know it was spoken about here. This is a raid on a home that they actually got upset because I was videotaping them. But if you see the gentleman on top with the ski mask, they were enforcing a removal order.
You were detained when you were doing this video.
I wasn't detained here. I was detained at a different instance, but simply for videotaping. So again, you know, U.S. citizen. I was born here. I consider myself a Mexican. I was born in the U.S. I was detained and arrested mainly because of the way I look, and especially because I had a camera. They didn't like that. They didn't like that I was recording them, so they did detain me. But the only reason why I'm here today is because, number one, I knew what my rights were, and number two, I was part of an organization. So this is the important part about doing what we consider human rights promotion and advocacy, is to let people know what their rights are so they can begin to detain them. And so the other things that we see is home raids, worksite, now Social Security. If you've heard just 2 days ago, the No Match Department of Homeland Security said that they're going to use the Social Security No Match letters that usually go to people who maybe put in a wrong Social Security number on their work applications, and they're now going to go to those sites or to those people and detain them. They start deputizing local police to enforce immigration laws with the 287G, which is a legal, it's part of the immigration laws that stipulate that we can deputize local law enforcement. Local law enforcement don't have the jurisdiction, but if they get deputized and go through this training, now they can enforce immigration laws. And so what does this mean to migrant communities? Very particularly is that there's fear in the community. There is, in my slide, well, this is probably an old version, that's why the slides are moved around and don't have everything. But in essence, what is happening is that there's high levels of tension, high levels of fear. People don't want to call, not even law enforcement anymore, because they do have this fear of being detained. We see a virtual state of siege, and in essence, we see what we consider to be a virtual state terrorism being unleashed on migrant communities. And we say it in no uncertain terms, without vacillation, that this is state terrorism. And we must say it because the tactics and strategy that is being utilized against workers, against people who come to work primarily, there's also a level of criminalization happening, not only just by working, you're breaking the law. Just by being here physically, you're breaking the law. Just by trying to feed your family and create a sustainable life for yourself, you're considered a criminal. And these strategies that we see taking place are actually violations of the basic right to live with peace, to live with dignity, and to live without fear of having a safe and unified place for your family. The very essence of our society, which is the family unit, the nucleus of our society, is being systematically and deliberately torn apart. We have families who now live in Tijuana. The children are, in essence, raising their siblings. We have cases where 3, 4, 5-year-olds have been left at home by themselves or given to a neighbor. We have children going into foster care because their parents were deported. We have, in essence, a sick society, sick physically, mentally, psychologically, and I think more dangerously, a society that does not respect the rights of people, to the point where we even consider people, or this society, not me in particular, or the organization that we work with, illegal aliens, right? As if from another space, from another planet. I'm talking about human beings here, and I think that being a health organization, it's very comforting at least to know that this issue and topic of human rights is being discussed, and that we must engage in further dialogue to gain an understanding as to how to solve this issue. We propose, real quick now to wrap it up, because I know I'm going beyond my time, is a reevaluation of the economic policies that are forcing migration. NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, must be re-looked at, renegotiated, redefined, so that every human being has the ability to live with peace, justice, dignity, with the basics of housing, education, work, food, health, because there's enough resources on this planet to feed, clothe, and provide the basic needs to every man, woman, and child. We cannot talk about democracy, justice, when you have four people on the on this earth that have more resources and concentration of wealth than the 48 poorest countries in the world today. So with that, I thank you for being so attentive, and I wait for a question and answer session. Thank you.
So bear with us for just a second as we do a technology changeover here.
Do you have slides? I don't. Are you
We
can put up a visual.
It can be, but you have to upload it through the AKH system. So
don't. That's
okay. It might be easier to just. Well, our next speaker today is Andrea Guerrero. She is going to talk to us about immigration in detention centers here in the U.S. She is the field and policy director of the ACLU of San Diego. So I welcome Andrea.
So I think we need to take this out.